Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Scheiber. I am your host, and it's so glad to have you listening to the podcast today. We certainly appreciate the time that we get to spend together, and we're looking forward today to talking a little bit about higher education and an excellent article that you will find at the jamesgmartin.center website. And by the way, that's a new extension. It's not .com or .org. It's jamesgmartin.center. And of course, that is the website for the James G. Martin Center for Academic Renewal. And an article there written by their president, Jenna Robinson, entitled Bigger's Better? In Higher Education's Amenities Arms Race, Bigger's Just Bigger. And we're going to talk to her about the large amount of money that is being spent in what she calls an arms race, characterizing the, you know, building of more and better and bigger and upgrading student unions and play spaces and on and on and on. And she has some great examples from Raleigh's very own NC State University and some of the things that they have done in the last 5 to 10 years. And some probably necessary and needed, but some maybe a bit on the extravagant side. And we're talking about millions and millions and hundreds of millions of dollars being spent. And some of this is through public money. Some of it is through private money. But the bottom line is that tuitions have been going up. Student fees have been going up. And there doesn't seem to be any end in sight to this dramatic, she calls it an arms race. You know, well, you've got a great student union, so my college now has to have a better student union. You know, you've got 40-inch flat screens. You've got 10 of them all around your main lounge area. Well, now I've got 15 50-inch, you know, flat screen televisions, you know, and on and on and on. And so part of the problem is this really providing the best atmosphere for educating students? Can students afford this? And folks, I remember when I went to college, we didn't have any of that stuff. We were good to have one television hanging in the corner of the student union, and it didn't bother me a bit. I think I got a pretty good education. And so as times have changed, students have demanded more, but I don't think a lot of this is being fueled by students anymore. I think it's primarily just this trying to one-up each other in the name of, well, we have to be better than our neighbor university because we have to be able to recruit. And, you know, it's like college football. You know, we build a new stadium, so you've got to have a new stadium, and on it goes. So we'll talk to Jenna about that. But before we do, just want to thank you for listening and appreciate you sharing the good news of What Matters in North Carolina with your friends and your family members. We had a really good conversation yesterday with the Deputy Majority Whip of the North Carolina House and with the lead budget writer of the North Carolina House. That would be Representative John Bradford and Representative Nelson Dollar. And you can share that with your friends from freedomactionnetwork.com or the iTunes and Google Play stores, where you will find all of our podcasts. And why not subscribe and have it dropped into your computer or phone every single day so you don't miss a minute. As I've said before, the General Assembly has cranked up, and this is an excellent resource for you to stay informed about things that matter in North Carolina. Joining us now on What Matters in North Carolina, always a pleasure to talk with Jenna Robinson. She is the president of the James G. Martin Center for Academic Renewal. And Jenna, welcome back.
Hey, Mark.
Glad to have you. And of course, I'm always prompted to give you a call when I read your excellent work at jamesgmartin.center. And your latest is called Bigger's Better in Higher Ed's Amenities Arms Race. Bigger's Just Bigger. And so I've teed it up there, and I think I'll let you take a swing at it. Tell us what this is about.
Well, it's something that's been going on for a long time, is that universities, instead of luring students with great professors or low prices, they are competing for students by providing beautiful campuses, fancy amenities, dining halls, student centers, play spaces, gyms, country club amenities, really, is how I like to think of them.
And this goes back, I guess, in 2013, a professor from the University of Wisconsin sort of, I guess, started bringing some attention to this by saying that these college campuses were, quote, glorified summer camps. And with the rising cost of tuition, it's a little alarming at first glance to think about, well, the money that they're getting, they're just continuing to build and add on and et cetera.
Right. And I mean, it's not something we can blame campuses entirely for, because as I say in my article, if one campus does it, then another campus feels like they have to do it as well. And so that's why I liken it to an arms race, because even if administrators, and in particular faculty on campus, realize that students would be better served with better professors or more resources focused on teaching, you know, they're competing with each other on these other factors. And so it's really hard for universities to try to stand out to students, and they've ended up using these summer camp or country club amenities in order to do so.
I remember a friend of mine, his daughter was checking out various colleges and universities in North Carolina, and one of them that they went to, her name was in lights. There was a parking space, you know, with her name on it, and here she was, just someone, you know, looking into possibly going to this school. And
right.
And they were certainly impressed. They ended up going somewhere else, but mm-hmm. It makes sense, because we see in college athletics that, well, if Carolina builds a brand new, let me just make something up here. Well, a weight training facility. Well, now all of a sudden, you know, they can use that in recruiting, and so now Duke and State and Wake Forest have to have brand new weight training facilities, and so it just goes on and on.
Absolutely.
I'm concerned about, this is kind of off topic, but I'm concerned about the word play spaces here. reminds me of some of the nonsense, I call it, that we've seen over the last several months since the election. Is a play space the same thing as a safe space?
It's not a safe space.
Okay.
I'm referring to kind of all of the spaces that are set aside on campus for recreation. So there are, you know, volleyball courts, there are rec fields, there are, you know, more than you would ever expect. The gymnasiums are bigger and beautiful and more beautiful than the ones that you can join when you're out and working in the workforce. I know that the gym at NC State is much nicer than anything that I can join now. Which is, it's crazy.
I remember when I went to college a long time ago, I went to the College of Charleston, which was not a university at the time, and the gym that they had was was in an old building, and they still had the bleachers, if you can believe it. I don't know if you remember, if you're old enough to remember going to school, where they have these wooden bleachers that roll out, and then you can roll them back to make more space.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that wasn't anything like what they have now or what most places have now. And, you know, I think I got as good of an education, Jenna, with rollout wooden bleachers as I would have with, you know, a multi-million-dollar basketball facility.
Right. Of course that's the case. And the students who know that are the very top academically. So the students who are the top academically, those are the ones who are looking for better instruction, better professors, opportunities for research. But the National Bureau of Economic Research found that students who have kind of low academic skills but are wealthy, those are the students who are really interested in the amenities.
Yeah, sure.
And additionally, interest in amenities, demand for amenities is a lot broader than demand for instruction. It's only the best and brightest who are interested in instruction, but everybody's interested in amenities. There's a lot of demand for that. So colleges are really stuck if they want to compete for anyone other than straight-A students. And, of course, we know B students and even C students go to college now.
Well, yeah, and we're talking with Jenna Robinson from the James G. Martin Center for Academic Renewal, formerly the Pope Center for Higher Education, for those of you that might not have heard of that as of yet. But I'm thinking, you know, Liberty University is a good example of a private school that if you go up there in Virginia, they are just, they've completely lost their mind when it comes to building. I mean, every time you drive through that campus, they're building another softball facility, a concert hall, a new dorm, and it gives the impression that they're sitting on mountains of cash. And I've talked to parents who, by the way, it's not cheap to go there. And, you know, you begin to wonder, okay, maybe we could cut tuition, say, in half if you didn't feel the need to keep building. As you mentioned in your article, it's parents and student borrowers, and then in the case of state institutions, taxpayers that pay for all this stuff.
Absolutely, and it does add up. Of course, you know that we just had a bond here in North Carolina passed. About half of it is going to higher education. And in my research, I found that there were only two schools that had any, you know, real need for more space. There were two schools that were kind of running out of lab spaces, so they needed more labs. But most of the schools don't need more space. They've got more than adequate space. And as I showed in the article, most of the space on campus isn't devoted to instruction anyway. It's offices or it's student amenities space, support space, general use. You know, very little is instruction.
Yeah, and I'm sort of getting off the tenor of your article here, but it's related. One of the things that concerned me when I was looking at the bond that the Governor McCrory was so eager to get passed, and which eventually did pass, the Connect NC bond, $2 billion, they were talking about, well, you know, we're going to build new this and that at Carolina, and people were saying, look, our classrooms aren't even full. We don't need more buildings.
Right.
And so
the classrooms are certainly not full, and UNC's own data show that, the system data.
So when it comes down to it, do you have administrators who are just feeling, you know, peer pressure from competing institutions to just keep up with the Joneses, so to speak? And is there an end to this in sight?
I think it's all administrators feel like they have to do it. So I think that the solutions, there are a couple of solutions. The professor you mentioned that I mentioned in the beginning of my article, her solution is to put a cap on how much students can borrow. If you can't borrow as much, you'll be much more sensitive to price. And so let's force universities to compete on price instead of on bells and whistles. But I think that there are state solutions too. And I think that, you know, one of them is for, you know, boards of governors and legislators to be more careful and look into the data more thoroughly when universities say that they need more space. Because it, you know, keeping up with the Joneses is not a good enough reason to raise students' tuition, or in the case of some buildings, to raise the student debt or the student debt fee at universities. I don't think that's a good enough reason. There has to be a real need for the space to do that. And I think that, as we've seen recently here in North Carolina, with the legislature's, you know, $500 per semester tuition plan at some colleges here in the state, let's compete on price. Let's try to actually do that. And at the same time, let's rein in those costs.
Now, you make a very practical North Carolina reference in your article about North Carolina State and how recently they have done some renovations to the Tally Student Union, which, by the way, has really good ice cream, and Harrelson Hall, and some of the old Riddick Stadium torn down and that sort of stuff. And you say that perhaps, you know, in the case of Harrelson Hall, maybe it was not a bad idea because it was...
It was awful. I had to take classes there. It was terrible.
So before we get into state, though, here's what jumps off the page at me, Jenna. Quote, and its endowment, referring to NC State, is poised to crack $1 billion this year. Now, with all that money, why is there a need to raise tuition and put the burden on parents and students and all that?
Right. Well, the way universities view endowments is that most of the money is invested. You only use, you know, the interest money and only some of it.
Oh.
So most of that $1 billion just sits around and generates income. You know, they're not digging into the principal in order to fund even long-term capital projects.
Huh. Well, so here we are, and we're talking about the Tally Student Union, $120 million renovation, mega structure. You say it's home to a 1,200-seat ballroom, art installations, fireplace lounges, sleek meeting spaces where a lot of stuff can go on, 9 high-quality dining options, and you say 15 years ago there were 3. Little Dino's, Taco Bell, and a hamburger place. None of them made the cut in the new union. I was in there not so long ago before they made all of these renovations, and I thought it was a fine place. I mean, were people complaining, well, this place is just awful, or what motivated them to spend $120 million?
Well, the building was older, and I think that, you know, a lot of times the way that people view university buildings, that they only have a useful life of 50 years or so. And so I think just the age of the building got people thinking that they wanted to renovate it. But I think that there is also a vision of how NC State should look to compete with other universities. They want to have a particular look on campus. They want to provide everything that students demand, and a lot of what goes on in the student union is student services. And so, you know, in many ways, it's just kind of the trendy new thing to do on campus is to have these fancy unions. And I can't imagine how much money students are spending now on just eating lunch every day, because the options they have at Tally are, you know, they're $7, $8, $9 lunches. And so, I mean, if I had gotten through that kind of money when I was a student, I would have heard about it from my parents.
Well, I remember I was happy to have a 50-cent slice of greasy pizza from the student union at the College of Charleston. But right. Now I'm telling you how old I am. And so,
I have fond memories of eating Little Dino's all the time. It was a sub shop, and they, you know, little 4-inch subs, turkey and cheese and mustard and... really cheap.
And they were probably really good.
They were great. Yeah. They were fine. And, you know, for my student days, they were the fact that they were right there and they were inexpensive, that's all I needed.
Yeah. So continuing on here, State looks like they've just really, really gotten out of control here. You mentioned also an annual, well, here's other lavish projects. The Hunt Library 2013 had opened at a cost to the public of $115.2 million, in addition to more than $4 million in annual operating costs. Also, the physical master plan at NC State, released in 2014, includes a vision of world-class facilities and surroundings with 17 key projects. And so, you know, they're talking about wanting to create a source of pride. And you, I think, very astutely mentioned it will also be a source of significant future spending. And one example that you give here is that a $290 annual fee will be paid for the next 25 years by students, a student fee being raised phased in over 4 years. And that was back in 2011. This is a 40% increase over what it was in 2009, and tuition fees have already gone up more than 27%. Now, that was in 2011. I'm sure they've gone up even more now.
Absolutely.
Here in 2017.
And that's for that Tally Student Union we were talking
yeah.
about. That's where that fee comes from.
So Is so you mentioned, okay, maybe we put a cap on student loans, and do you think that would work?
I think that one of the reasons students can demand these amenities is that they know that their education is going to be financed by the federal government. And, you know, public universities are certainly not the worst offenders on this. But some of these private universities, students are borrowing very large amounts of money and end up paying for bells and whistles and gymnasiums and saunas, and then have trouble paying back their student loans. So I think that if we did put a cap on how much students could borrow, the maximum amount, it would force universities to be more careful and more intentional about their spending.
Now, this is really shocking to me. You say despite claims to the contrary, most universities don't need more space or more construction. And again, looking at NC State, only 20% of the campus space is allocated for instruction and study, research 17%, but support, office space, and other non-education related spaces make up more than 60% of the campus. Jenna, that's outrageous.
It is, and I think one of the biggest categories is office space. And of course, that's because there has been a proliferation of administrators and professional staff and paraprofessional staff. You know, the people who staff the diversity office and the student affairs office and the, you know, just the various other kind of non-academic offices across campus.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that you have written something that bears our listeners reading, and I will certainly direct them to the JamesGMartin.Center website, and the article, Bigger's Better in Higher Ed's Amenities Arm Race Bigger, is just better, and you've written this piece, and I appreciate you talking with us about it. I think that, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think at some point, Jenna, that there's got to be a tipping point. I mean, particularly in higher education, I mean, cost just keeps going up, fees just keep going up, you know, all of these expenses just keep being incurred, and it's like the whole thing is out of control. And at some point, it seems like, you know, it's just gonna, if it's not stopped by, you know, prudent decisions, let's say by the Board of Governors, it's just gonna fall under its own weight. Am I being too dramatic?
I honestly think that people are already starting to respond. A few years ago, the percent of high school students going to a four-year college and university peaked, and now it has started coming down a little bit. So I think that consumers are starting to make different decisions than they once did, and they're starting to question the assumption that they have to go to a four-year university right after high school. And I think the reason we're seeing that is because of the student debt, because of some of the craziness we've seen on college campuses. So I do think consumers are starting to respond, and it's going to be slow. It's
yeah.
not going to be the popping of a big bubble. But I think that we are starting to see some change.
Well, one last question, and this brings up a point of ideology. You know, conservatives don't want government really getting too involved in this sort of thing. So where do you draw that line between government saying, okay, you know, just stop this and we're not going to fund it, or, as you say, the market, which is already responding somewhat, you know, taking care of some of these extravagancies itself?
Right. I think that there's a place, especially, you know, it's a public university system, there's a place for approval or not approving big expenditures, you know, at the Board of Governors level. And of course, there's a role for the legislature, especially when, you know, a bond issue, something like that, borrowing massive amounts of money.
Right.
So I think that the oversight structure that we have is the right oversight structure. I think that maybe the people doing that oversight, though, just need to look a little bit more closely when universities are asking for more capital projects.
Well, we'll leave it there. I think that's well stated. And Jenna, you're always a great guest. Thank you so much for joining us here on What Matters in North Carolina.
Well, thank you for having me on.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Always a great opportunity when I get a chance to talk with Jenna Robinson from the James G. Martin Center for Academic Renewal. And she just writes such good stuff, and it's very insightful and very informative. And I encourage you to read Jenna's work at jamesgmartin.center. Remember, it's not .com or .edu or .org. It's a new extension, jamesgmartin.center. And I hope that you enjoyed that. And we try to talk about things that matter in North Carolina. And folks, we've got some major universities and colleges all across our state. And can parents and kids keep up financially? It's a good question, and one that I think a lot of moms and dads are asking themselves even now, even today, and have been asking themselves. You know, college and university just keeps getting more and more expensive. And maybe somebody ought to ask, do we really need those marble floors? Somebody might say, yeah, well, you know, over at ECU, they got marble floors. And you know what I mean? It just goes on and on. And I think at some point, the free market is going to say, okay, well, we can't keep doing this because nobody's going to come to our college because they can't afford it anymore. And but Jenna makes a good point. We do have a good system in place with the Board of Governors, and perhaps they can, you know, maybe tell these people to calm down a little bit and maybe be a little bit more prudent with the way that they spend money. Good stuff. Thanks, Jenna Robinson. And thank you for listening today to What Matters in North Carolina.